I'll begin with just a brief quotation from this small book. It all seems to fit in so well with writing. Energy is what fills the universe. Energy is what comes and goes. Consciousness is what defines the energy. Under that consciousness, we're each in touch with all of it. Under means within. Truth is found within. And bringing it to consciousness is the act of creation, which is what we try to do in a very raw way during this hour that we're here. Another person that I would recommend to you, if you've been writing for a long time, or if you just want to get into it a little bit, or whatever your interest is, William Stafford is probably the kindest writer you could pick up. He's a Quaker and a pacifist, and has wonderful writing. Two books, Writing the Australian Crawl and You Must Revise Your Life, are his prose books. And he has many, many books of poetry. This is the one that I've been using this week. And this is from another Minnesota magazine, but it's a quote from Stafford, and then Tom Tamaro, who teaches writing, or Tom Morrow, who teaches writing, recommends the other one that I have here too, Ray Maria Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet. And I looked in the card catalog. It's in the card catalog, but the books on the shelf end with whatever the number is, 0.7, and Rilke's is 0.8, and I don't know where the rest of the numbers go, but it is in the card catalog, so if you want to look at it, you might ask the librarian. This is called A Writing Life, and it's just a short excerpt from William Stafford's An Introduction to Some Poems. The authentic is a line from one thing along to the next. It interests us. Strangely, it relates to what works, but it's not quite the same. It never swerves for revenge or profit or fame. It holds together something more than the world. And Tom Tamaro says, when my students come to me to talk about their interest and desire to write, I do two things. I encourage them to write, and I give them copies of Frost's poem, Two Tramps in Mud Time, Rilke's brilliant first letter from his Letters to a Young Poet, and a copy of William Stafford's wonderfully liberating collection of essays and interviews, Writing the Australian Crawl. I can think of no better guides for anyone who is thinking about choosing writing as a vocation, and writing for any reason at all would be good enough reason to read those. Two other poets I'd like you to hear about here, on the back side of this. Two wonderful women poets, Marge Piercy and Anne Sexton. These are some things to think about as you decide what part writing is going to play in your life. Writing is such a wonderful thing because all you have to do is have pen and paper, or pencil and paper, and you can do it anywhere, anytime. And you can do brief little bits or you can do long bits. You must learn how to prepare a daily way for the combination of concentration and receptivity. Find out when you work best and arrange the days you have or the hours to channel yourself into full concentration. And this kind of writing, this writing practice, just as you practice to run a marathon, just as you practice to swim in a meet, you practice your writing in the same way by doing it regularly and daily if you can, and finding a place where you can give it full concentration. Don't let anything else interrupt. Figure out the funnel that works for you. I give you all these exercises. Some may not work for you, but if one does, you could try it again. It may not work the second time, but there are all kinds of ways you can pull out of the exercises and go into other ways for yourself. Good work habits are nothing more than habits that let you work, that encourage you to pay attention. Focus is most of it, to be fierce and pointed so that everything else momentarily sloughs away. And when I say poets, just include that as all writing, because I know all of you probably aren't interested in writing, but the rules for poets are the same for any kind of writer, whether you're doing prose or fiction or poetry. All poets or all writers have a little critic in their head. You have to turn the little critic off while you are beginning so that it doesn't inhibit you. Then you have to turn it on again when you revise and refine. So what we're doing in this session is raw writing, which would give you material for more writing or give you more ideas of what's inside of you. The theme of listening to the sacred, the way I interpreted it, is listening to the creative voice inside of you, which is the sacred. God is the creator, and so that creative voice in you is the sacred. And you don't write for an audience, so when you write in here today, don't worry about what the person next to you is going to think about it or what I'm going to think about it. That isn't the important thing. The important thing is to get down your first thoughts, and that's the purpose of not thinking. You can forget everything you did as writers in grade school or high school, where you had to be very careful and a teacher had certain expectations. There are no expectations. In fact, what is best is if you can leave everything outside the room and come in with an empty or a clean slate and start from there. So remember that as you write. You write for one person probably in the beginning, yourself, and maybe that's all you ever write for, and that's enough. So we'll start with an exercise just to give you an idea of how it works. Why don't each of you just reach for one of the books in front of you and then just open up the book to a page, quickly. Just open it up to a page. No, everyone doesn't need one. Just those that reach for
a book. Okay.
If you got a book.
No.
Okay.
This is my goal.
You two right there. Give us the first line off the top of the first line of the poem that you've turned to there. The top line, not the title, but the first line.
Over. Over.
That's one word?
If there were something to write back.
If there was something to write back, okay. All of you write that at the top of your first reading page. If there were something to write back. A timed writing from this now. We'll just do quick ones. We'll just do 3 minutes. The object when, if you continue to do this yourself, oh, by the way, Natalie Goldberg is who, this is her method of writing. It's not mine. I don't know anything of my own. This is all stolen from everybody else. But she also has another book called Writing Down the Bones, which was her first book, and this is her second book. And she uses the same method in everything. She also has a novel called The Long Quiet Highway, which is in the bookstore. And I think these two books are there, although I haven't seen them, but people say they are, so I'm sure they must be. This one is for sure, I know, because I brought mine there. And this one is kind of a continuation. It's about her life and about her Zen master. She kind of combines poetry and Zen, because, or writing and Zen, because writing is actually a form of meditation if you want to use it that way. But these are excellent books for giving you things to write about and telling you how to do it. So you don't have to think. All you have to do is go with what she tells you to do. All right, so take this line that you have at the top of your page and take the first thoughts that come and simply keep writing. Keep your hand moving for the 3 minutes that I type. Lose control, be specific, don't think. If I see pens that aren't moving, I'll know you're thinking, and that's not allowed. Just keep writing. Take the first thoughts that come, whether they're connected or related or not to that line. Read the line and then just go with what comes from that. Someone else that grabbed a book, give us a line to start from. Just open it randomly to a page and give us the first line.
At 30, she married a stranger.
Oh, great. At 30, she married a stranger. Start a new page if you'd like to continue some other time with the one you've already done. We'll read from these, but skip to a clean place and start with, at 30, she married a stranger. Okay, finish the line you're on. And one other person that has a book in here, open it and give us a line.
There was no stopping it, the skunk dragging intestines across the highway.
What?
The skunk dragging intestines across the highway.
Okay. Read it once more louder.
Or maybe so I should just There was no stopping it, the skunk dragging intestines across that head.
There was no stopping it. So if you write that line down, we're doing a 2-minute time break.
Yeah, maybe that really is the first line.
There was no stopping it. Okay. She's already edited her line.
It is only the first line, but then it was such a great. There was no stopping it.
We've decided to cut off the second line.
Yeah, because it really is that's the first line.
Then you just take the first thoughts that come to your mind after reading that line and write, keeping your hand moving, lose control, be specific. In other words, use details. Don't think, don't worry about punctuation, grammar, and spelling, or what anyone's going to think about it. Try to get your first thoughts down. Okay, you can finish the line you're on and then look at your three writings and pick out one of them that you could read for us. We'll just go around the table and read one of those aloud so that people can hear where your first thoughts have taken you. And in this kind of a workshop, because it's all raw writing, there's never any praise or blame or anything like that. What we sometimes do is try to notice the details that people bring into their writing, sometimes just making a list of those on the sheet of paper. And those of you that, as you read too, you might think, be conscious of that. If you went back to this writing, what you might do is add more details to make it more specific and so forth. Sometimes when we do first thoughts, we can't get all of that in, and that's nothing to worry about because you can always go back and add more things. If you read Natalie Goldberg, she does things like, she'll just in a regular paragraph of something else, she'll be sure to give you the color of the tablecloth at the restaurant she's writing at, or she'll give you the sign that's across the street, the neon sign that's across the street, or the name of the street sign that she can see from the corner of her window, or something like that. So she remembers specific details, and I think a lot of that gets put down because she does regular writing, daily writing, so if she's in a specific place, she puts in those details. When she wants to write, she can, if she can't pull them out of her memory, she can go back and she has them. So even if you're just a journaler, and I shouldn't say even if you're just a journaler, journaling is a very important form of writing, as is writing letters. And so details are something you can think about when you're doing those even. What you're wearing that day, what you had for breakfast, you don't need to do it all the time, but sometimes those things are important 30 years later when you go back and look at those things. You want to know specific details, and those are the things that you don't remember as you get older. Okay, let's just go around, and what we'll do is someone will simply read, and we'll leave a space so that we can hear the words again in our heads, and then the next person will read, and we'll just go around that way. How would you like to start?
If there was something to write back, a way to hand you the vision of trail blueberries crushed like smoke in a palm, a manner of tethering myself from mountain to valley, if there were a space, a clearing, an empty page to fill without shame or stutter, it would be my offering to you. Instead, there are these speckled rocks I find, calling, laughing, look, gold. Instead, there are these drowned leaves of amber and topaz, tinged with the season to come, a red as deep and bloody as the moon, the birth cradle within a woman's flesh.
If there were something to write back to my house mother in nursing school 30 years ago, it would be that I never forgave you for the petty rules and inspections that were done on this group of 18-year-old women. They were called girls then, who were daily confronting life and death, struggles in a hospital, and being told that they must clean their rooms, be charming, even taking a charm course on how to dress, remember names, and walk. And now I'm learning from another source how to walk, not to please others, but to please myself.
There was no stopping it. My mind ran away from that point on when she first told me about her daughter's first year in college, the classes in philosophy, English, and French, the roommate problems and joys, the tearful phone calls and triumphant visits.
There's no stopping it. The automobiles had already started, and so after them the bicycles, and the assorted jugglers, clowns, and acrobats. No one had the intestinal fortitude to stop such an anticipated event. So the parade went on, and everyone who knew of the terrible circumstances felt a sense of impending doom when the celebrated individual would not appear for a speech. Most of the men also felt ashamed for being weak and unable to make the necessary announcement.
No, we need to hear the rest of that one.
There was no stopping it. No matter what he did, Franz Huber could not prevent his wife from her growing interest in bathroom cock. Even the first times to be innocent, something that they could share a laugh over as they poured salad dressing at dinner. Those posters of the plumber with his ass crack, the taped advertisement of famous cocks taped to the wall. But it started to get serious when she was talking about national conventions and rummaging the local hardware store for just the right applicator tips. What was it in this cock that intrigued her, he wondered, this pasty white sticky thing that had come between them?
I took a different tack. I think I'm going to pass this time.
Oh, no, don't want to.
I've got to.
I think you have to learn when you're reading in a group that it isn't whether you like or different from whatever else is written. You do have the privilege of passing, however, that's fine. But no, it's just so amazing the way the mind goes in such different directions, and I think it's just exciting to hear what comes out of somebody else's line.
If there were something to write back, I would. But I can't because there's emptiness, unfulfillment, a gape in things. And so I am silent. I need time to reflect and mull over. Churning thoughts are in my head sometimes, but times of annoying blankness too. I have been able to write others back because it's simpler. There's not as much invested there. Giving to someone who doesn't demand as much is sometimes both easier and preferable.
If there was something to write back, I'd have done so. You let so much silence pass, I lost touch. My caring ceased, the vacuum was greater. If it was more than sheer pain at your loss, I would have written, but the emptiness left nothing to write. I didn't want to connect anymore. The past is over. It's time to march on, to glide on, to reach, to stretch, turn, twist, move forward, only go forward.
There was no stopping it. The wood pieces rose up and made themselves up in line to be split, leaping from the splitter, the red wood inside coming out like a stuck lesbian finally showing herself. The pieces sometimes grudgingly stretched themselves out as the splitter squeezed them, not wanting it to be torn from the rest of its piece, until at last the hatchet falls lightly and undoes the last twisted runs that were holding it. The split pieces then lighted themselves up and over the wood stack, sometimes on top, sometimes on the side, on the edge, stumbling down.
There was no stopping it. I can relate to the skunk dragging intestines across the For the porcupine in my path, some things have an inherent power to arrest. The natural stopping, the contrived, the intellectual, the safe, the sanitized. The odor permeates my cloud, the barb punctures my balloon.
If there was something to write back, thinking about letters from parents at school, how sad they made me and how they were trying to cheer me up, but their happy, cheery letters only made it worse. And I always wanted to send cheery letters back, but could never write at all because it was all so sad. I will never send Anna to boarding school unless she really begs to go, but I suppose it's changed now. For me, it was so bleak, so solitary, so isolated, so brittle and bare and cold. And yet I had good friends there, but they were sad too. That was the basis of the friendships.
If there's something to write back, she would. But to examine her life in response to his questions would take time, hurt, be painful, take work, require outside studies, mentors, religions, and masters. So she dwells, stews the turmoil, basting her self-loathing with an impure sexuality, clawing for a response, begging for appreciation, but unwilling to angle for that fish, no lines to cast for salvation. No anchors, so we drift. I am shackled to her agony. I am part and parcel of her pain, with little reward except confidence, new shoes, new places to go, self-respect, and wholeness.
If there was something to write back, I wouldn't have written to you at all. You are not the one with answers, even though you always have enough to say, no, too much to say. Words, words, I think you must lay at night alone in your bed, thinking of these things to say, storing them, categorizing them, to use another day, so you can appear intelligent, wise, but at once spontaneous. I know the truth, but I do not speak because I have watched you, and I have learned that silence is intelligent, wise, and spontaneous.
I'll pass.
Okay. All right, what you have written already is, a lot of it sounds like good material to continue and to polish up and have this finished writing, or for continuing another writing. And ways to get going are as close as whatever book is at hand. It can be a magazine, it can be a newspaper. Newspaper articles are wonderful ways to get into the unconscious and do writing, or just to simply write about a newspaper article that you read. It can be a great method of doing that. Anne Sexton also says, the poet must work, or the writer must work unconsciously, must continue to be startled by life. And that's very important, I think, to be open and submissive and receptive to whatever is there and to be startled. I think that's what the writer, any artist, I think, is in that mode of thinking, is always startled by life and then interprets that somehow into his work or her work and gives it to us. If we should start being reasonable, and if you go back and do some of these pieces, again, some of you might want to be even more outrageous in them and make different connections you wouldn't think of, because even though they might seem not logical or not to work, they really do. Everything is connected, so try to even get more outrageous in the connections you make with what you're writing about. To understand why we write or just what we write, I'll start with that again. If we should start being reasonable, to understand why we write or just what we write, if we understood ourselves, we might stop writing. So you don't need to understand what it is you're writing. Logic is probably the biggest killer of good creative writing. I think sometimes when I do a piece and then go back and try to revise it, I get rid of probably the good energy that was there to begin with and don't always recognize what it is that holds it there. Jim Harrison is a poet who lives on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and this is one book that I love the best of his. He has 7 or 8 novels, I think, but he also has a couple of books of poetry. I'm just going to read part of a poem. It's called Acting, but I would almost retitle it Writing, or any kind of artwork that you do. We are our consciousness, and it is the God in us who struggles to be in everyone in order to be ourselves. When you see the chalked form of the murdered man on the cement, throw yourself onto it and feel the heat of the stone-hard fit. This is the liquid poem, the forefinger traced around both the neck and the sun. To be and be and be as a creek turns corners by grace of volume, heft of water, speed of rate of drop, even the contour of stone changing day by day, so that when you wake in the night, the freedom of the nightmare turned to dream follows you into morning, and there is no skin on earth you cannot enter, no beast or plant, no man or woman you may not flow through and become. And I think there's that possibility in your writing to become all of those things if you choose. Okay, now what I thought we would do is go from those simple writing practices, and I would like to give you, there are a couple of you that were in the earlier class, so you have this, I have different words this time. But this is a 40-word meditation, and it's something, if you want to copy it, you can, or you can just do it for the exercise today. But it's some writing for a long time when you don't know how to get started. Just hold it there a minute, probably the other side, and maybe this table even hold it. Hardwood. I should have gotten tape. There is one other piece of tape for that. Okay. And this is something that's done regularly by Carolyn Porchette, who is a poet now in about her 40s, and most of her poetry, she became famous by writing about 6 or 8 political poems that were published in her first book about El Salvador. And she now has about a 10-pound book, an anthology of poetry of witness that is out. And I can't think of the title at this moment.
Against
Forgetting. Thank you. It's
what
a wonderful title. Against Forgetting.
What is her name?
Carolyn Porchette, F-O-R-C-H-E. Porchette. She teaches at Georgetown University, and teaches often in Split Rock at Duluth in the summertime, teaches writing classes. So this is a practice that she uses for classes that she teaches. So what you will be doing is simply taking one word from each line, just selecting randomly one word from each line. So you'll have 10 words at the top of your page, just write them across the top of your page. And then what you will do with those 10 words is select one of these below here. I walk on the dirt road not being my father. Once when we hid, no one ever found us. It's a summer evening. Today the snow is drifting. So you will have these 10 words that you've selected across the top of your paper. And then you'll take one line and write from that, only using the 10 words that you've chosen. And you can change tenses and make them plural or singular that way. But of course, put other words with it. You just have to use those 10, and you'll end up with, I think we'll do a 5-minute timed writing for this, but you should have at least 10 to 12 lines of writing, and you can just put each thought on a line if you want it to go into some sort of a poetic form, or you can do it in prose form. It doesn't make any difference. Just don't think, and keep writing from the line that you choose, and then selecting the words that you have at the top of your page. Are there any questions on that? Does that make sense? Pardon? Yes, choose one of these as your first line, and again, go wherever your first thoughts take you. They can take you far away from this first line, or whatever it can be. Completely imaginary, it can be whatever you want it to be. There are no rules, except that you keep your hand moving, that you don't think, that you try to get in specific details. When you do this kind of writing, it doesn't have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It doesn't have to have closure. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to take you someplace. It can just be random writing, just as these are random words. You might see a phrase in a magazine that will set something off in you, and you take that phrase and you write from it. The idea is to not think about things, to get at the unconscious, whatever it is that's going along in that dark under river. Everything you've ever seen or heard or done or thought is in that river of your unconscious, and it's just waiting for something to pull it out. Most of the time we don't sit still long enough or stop long enough to let that come to the surface. So this is a writing meditation that gets at that.
I haven't done this kind of exercise before, and I'm wondering, with this particular one, I was moving down a few lines and then interrupting my thoughts in order to go back. Get a new word. Mm-hmm. Or should I have taken all 10 words in a clump and tried to write from them?
There's no one way to do it.
Okay.
You could even forget about it. When you're doing an unconscious exercise, if what you start to do isn't what happens when you start writing, just forget about it. Yeah. So if it was intrusive, you should just keep right on it. I mean, there are no shoulds either. There are no shoulds.
Yeah.
It's just to go with those thoughts that come to your mind. And if going back for a word is going to interrupt, then don't do it. You know, that sort of thing. So there are no rules. This is just a way of trying to find out to say things that you wouldn't say otherwise. Because if you get intentional and logic about it, well, I'm going to write the great American novel, you know, it's not going to be the same thing. You're not going to get at the same thoughts. So unintentional writing tries to get at the unconscious and at first thoughts. And of course, it's by no means what you're going to have as a finished product. This is called raw writing, and it's material for lots of other writing. What you can do with what you have written right there is go through and substitute a different word in place of each word you've already chosen and see what happens to that piece of writing. Just to get weird associations, just to get your mind loosened up and moving. Then you can also rearrange what you've written. Maybe it isn't in the form you would like it to be. If you go back and there are things in there that you like, but it would be better in a different order, you can rearrange it and revise it and end up with another piece. You could do several writings. Next time, go through and choose 10 different words and do a different line, or write from the same line, or however you want to do it. And then maybe those two pieces will combine. The one way that worked for me, because I'm a morning person, I had been reading some things the night before by Rebecca Lee, who was here as a poet a few weeks ago. Some things about how she writes, how her poetry is collage, and how we layer, you know, it's all pieces from our lives and they're layered together. So I had read those things at night, and then I woke up, I had my notebook by my bed, and this list, and these beginnings. And then I did the choosing at that moment, and I wrote for like 2 hours. And I went from the words, writing from the words, and I just did the words. I didn't take a line the first time. I just wrote from the words. I took 10 words and wrote. Then I took a line and wrote. But continuing right after this, forgetting about the 10 words and just writing from a line. And did exercises like that for about 2 hours. And in that way, pushing way beyond what you would normally write is important. Because when you write just a little bit, you don't know what else is there. You have to go on beyond that. Maybe what you've written so far isn't what you need to get at. Maybe it's still 2 or 3 hours or 5 or 10 pages away. Does that make any sense to anybody? So it's important to write a lot in this kind of exercise also. Why don't we just go around and read, well, we could do it with volunteers if we could. Otherwise, we can do it every other one. And then we'd have time for one more writing. Okay, I'm the teacher. We'll do every other one. We'll start here.
Today the snow is drifting. I am longing for the night to come. Let this day be done. When the sun arises, will the ruination of what should have been be gone? Perhaps not, but at least it will be one more step behind me. Each day is a step I take with a heart not happy as it once was. To choose a different path, in time I will. My hand.
Oh,
that's fine.
Once when we hid, no one found us. Now I face a century of silence. The fire in your Auschwitz frame is extinguished, and your soul has walked down the plush, off-white carpeted stairwell, across the cold brown tiles, to finally run up the driveway to the mailbox. As I write, remember this is all you ever wanted. Regret now is the shadow you left behind. Regrets bound from your primitive, wonderful, boundless violations. I waited more, and you waited less, if at all. Your weather was a storm, a downpour, I settled for mist. We both left the fort in the cane grass and emerged sweaty, sticky, cut, and bitten to find others.
I walk on the dirt road, being now a father, yet not being my father, who came to us as the new century came to us, tilling the sod into a field against all odds and at all hours. Looking for him through the ice-veined north window, knowing he would come to me, in from the cold. And on a warmer day, he would take me out of the house of the familiar to beyond the horizon, close as it was among the sand hills, shaped by the winter wind. I would too much choose that wind.
Today the snow is drifting. The silence opens my heart with my hand groping inside, looking and feeling like within a book. This life has been filled, and the heart says to choose slowly, oh slowly and gently, like a book to be savored. Each life and each choice is a route connecting to a century beyond, a century behind. The snow drifting reminds the hand and the heart to slow down, to silence, to consider, and then to commit, persist, and bloom from the nourishment of winter into the freshness and the budding of another spring in the circles and seasons of one's life.
It's a summer evening, the red and yellows of sunset. The reds and yellows of the sunset broadcasting to all who listen that this has been a glorious day. We sit on the log in silence, feet among the sand and shells and pieces of seaweed, hair blowing in the soft breeze, and letting our thoughts flow through the open windows of memory to other sunsets, other days that stay in our minds forever because they were significant to our joy, our growth, our wonder, our relationships. The colors change and fade, but the dot, 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 that's as far as I have.
It's a summer evening of hunger, and I find myself in the near dark at the border of night and the wilderness. The wind has picked up and throws sand against my face, and I look back at the ruin of the village I just left, and see smoke writing its epitaph against the dimming western sky. My hair is whipping around my face, and I proceed again to find myself sick and desiring nothing. The wilderness is thick and dark, and I am tired, so I sit and ponder lighting a fire, but not sure of the security that I could lose by violating the infinite darkness that is protecting me. By now, perhaps some of the men have returned. Some could be reasonable trackers, but I have left behind a very unnoticeable trail on the hard floor of the valley.
When we hid, no one ever found us. Or once when I hid, the neighborhood kids were playing Washington Polk on a warm summer night of unusual weather. I was the youngest kid. I chose to hide under the fearings wood pile, but there wasn't quite enough wood to cover me up. The fearings were an interesting family. I leaned with my piano teacher, but since my sister had vomited on her piano, with the goo going down between the keys, every time I hesitated during lessons, she would ask me nervously if I was all right. Harold was a teacher of visual arts. Anyway, it was very silent under the woodpile, and I soon discovered the game was over. I got really hungry, and I discovered that everyone had gone home.
Okay, some of you have beginnings of short stories, beginnings of novels here. This can take you wonderful places, so be sure you continue with it. Okay, now we'll do just another quick exercise. Let's see, are we an even number? We are, aren't we? Okay, if you just want to pair off with the person next to you, and a line sheet works better. Are there any line sheets? Okay, some of you do have. Is there anyone that wouldn't have a large sheet between you?
No, we don't.
Wait, let's see, could you give her a sheet of yours? There, okay. And you two, maybe you can just tear out one of yours.
Sure.
These are some random weirdness things that you can do that are always fun in a group. For example, if you have a friend and you meet at a restaurant and want to do some writing, and you're tired of just writing straight out of your mind, you can just, or out of your unconscious, you can do these kinds of exercises back and forth, and you can get some really pretty good lines out of them. A lot of what we deal with when we write are the big questions in life, who am I, who is God, where is God, all those sorts of things, whether we know that's what we're hitting at anyway. So what we're going to do in this exercise as partners, the first time around, number one in each partner, this is number one, one, one. So if you're number one in the pair, you will write a question, and then you'll fold it down and hand it to your partner, and your partner will write the answer without having to write the question.
Okay.
Yes, you'll write, you'll write your question on the top one, and then fold it down, and the next, maybe fold it down to the second line, and then the next person will write their answer on that. And I'll walk around to make sure no one peeks, but anyway, just keep doing that until you get to the, you're actually skipping a line, so when you get to the bottom of the page, we'll quit.
So number two, then we'll write a question and then I'll write an answer, or I'm just writing question, and she's writing.
Number one is only writing questions. Number two is only writing answers.
So you
all know what you're talking about. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay?
So how long can these answers be?
As long as the line.
Oh, the line.
Long is the line. The question cannot be longer than the line, and the answer cannot be longer than the line. Okay?
Got it.
And what was that about space?
Well, if you just, if you turn it down one extra space, it just is easier than trying to fold it on each line. And that way we'll only have half the lines filled instead of having to do the whole page, because we only have like about 5 minutes to do this in. So, if I call time.
She writes the answer, and if you give it back to me, I write another question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All you get
is questions.
That's easy.
Not necessarily, if you think it was that great. Okay, start. We'll do it quickly and we'll only go so far, and then we'll reverse it and let the other person do the answers. And No, don't look at the question. Oh, goodness, no. You're supposed to be watching for the energy from the person next to you and listening to the vibes. You know, that sort of thing. All the while they're writing the question, you should be thinking the great answer. And, of course, the object is not to think about it at all. Just to write down whatever
comes
up. There you go.
To the end of the page.
Spontaneous combustion. Question, draw a thick line, or just draw a line so you know it's the end of that first line.
Through now.
And then reverse. Where, no matter where you are, as long as you've answered the last question in your group.
Should we start with another piece of paper?
No, you can either draw a line, and then just switch.
Oh, okay. I need to write it.
So the one that was answering the question will now be asking the question. Did you answer the last question?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll draw a line, and then you'll write a question. Hold it again, hold it, and then write a question for him. What they do is stimulate a lot of thought in the person who's reading the piece also.